Welcome to edition 416 of Strange Days Indeed, the completion of the eighth year and the start of the ninth tonight, and we have a monster celebration for you. Julian McNabb out there in Master Control and myself. It's going to be a hot time in the old UFO town tonight. Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced. UFOs, unidentified flying objects. Program 416 in the current series. We go into our ninth year as of tonight. Just another magical milestone. Just endless. Still boggles my brain that I can sit here and say we start year nine. It only seems like 9 months ago we started with program number one with Scott Robbins and John Karras and the whole cast of characters, and it's good that you're still along with us after all this time and you've managed to maintain your interest and are still as intrigued by what is going on in the skies and on the ground around us as many of us who've worked on this program over the years still are also. Must apologize for my lack of live presence here last week. You may recall a couple of weeks ago Stuart Miller and I were talking about my back. Well, it got fairly ugly and had to take a weekend off and just lay around a lot on the floor and moan and groan on the way up and on the way back down. But it's better. Happily, acupuncture is amazing. It does wonders for we old types, older types. Yeah, when I'm 64. Yeah, I suddenly became a Beatles song. And I think I'm out of my neck. yeah, she doesn't love me anymore. And, yeah, of course she does. But, boy, too much going on in my life, I tell you. Getting older, wonky knees, wonky back. Well, they say life begins at 64, and we'll see how the remainder of it goes. Good to have you along tonight. My apologies for those of you who got really hung up waiting for podcasts to appear at iTunes and for archive programs to appear at the Virtually Strange Network site. Julian drives on Saturday night. I drive the rest of the week. Being a one-guy operation sometimes, especially when you get sidetracked, you know, that split second in the shower when you bend over to soap your knees, a life-changing moment. So, some interesting things going on in the week or so that I have not been here. A report out of New Glasgow, Nova Scotia. A witness pulled out on their street and noticed stars in the skies. One looked brighter than the rest. It was 6 a.m. on Tuesday, October 10th, 2006. It looked like the object was moving east in an S pattern. They got to a stop sign and looked up to make sure that it was really moving. But it was only one light, and it weren't blinking, so they ruled out a helicopter. They drove west, and as they drove, they kept a close eye on this object. It started to move in a southerly direction for a short time, and then back to an easterly direction. It started to wobble in an S pattern, moving west, and eventually disappeared in a bright flash. Our thanks to Brian Veich, the director of HBCC UFO, for that report. And that report is probably one of the last we'll hear from Brian Veich. He announced his retirement earlier this week. And we here at SDI wish him well and thank him for his contributions to the field. Good luck, Brian Veich. And it suddenly occurs to me, I neglected to fill you in on the lineup on tonight's program. Just getting all excited about feeling good again. Tonight on the program, Dave Frelott, very shortly with his take on it. UFO audio archivist Wendy Connors of FadedDiscs.com. Yes. And independent UFO researcher Jerry Cohen, who worked very quietly behind the scenes and has a very, very tasty website. You might want to go and check that out as the program progresses. And in the couple of weeks since I was here last, two researchers have ended up in hospital. Larry Hatch, the compiler of the U database and a former guest on this program, had a stroke back in June and is recovering in a California care center. And now nobody had heard from Larry for a couple, 3 months, and gradually the word started to get around that nobody had heard from Larry Hatch. He was tracked down. He's in a convalescent home in California and recovering nicely. Apparently, he's a little bit grumpy because he's sort of stuck there until things improve. We wish him well. And also, John Keel, the original Mothman investigator, had a heart attack recently. He's also recovering. So to both Larry Hatch and John Keel, our best wishes for a speedy recovery. We need people like them in the field. Interesting UFO report out of Florida. Witness says we had just passed through Groveland, traveling west on State Road 50 on Sunday, October 15th, when his wife observed four flying, glowing green lights or orbs in the northeast sky at around 9:05 in the evening. The shape of the lights was oval. Didn't we just say that already? They were moving very rapidly in a synchronized, almost choreographed pattern in the shape of a figure eight. We got S1s and 8-1s. The lights never appeared to touch or converge into one in the center of the pattern. When it looked like they would collide, they would suddenly veer away from each other and continue on in that figure eight pattern. So he pulled over and exited the vehicle to get a better look on a very dark section of the road. There was absolutely no sound. His wife, daughter, and he watched the lights from the side of the road for about 10 minutes. They then got back into their car and continued west on Florida State Road 50 into Hernando County. The wife and daughter continued to watch the lights almost continually until 9:36. At around 9:25, they observed two bright white lights that they attributed to helicopters heading toward the green ovals. The reporting witness said he first thought these might be advertising lights or something along the vein, that vein, but there were no beams trailing behind the glowing ovals. He's a retired police officer. He tries to look at things objectively without preconceived notions. His wife said that it had a calming effect on her, and his daughter, however, was anxious and somewhat scared. He said his wife suddenly became very tired and actually fell asleep right after they could no longer see the glowing objects. Strange days, huh?
These are strange days indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Frelott.
There's a thread on the UFO updates list that got me chuckling. It's entitled, What if Earth is a Penal Colony for Aliens? And it's based on an article that came out in the Halifax Daily News about the New Frontiers Symposium at St. Mary's University in Halifax, and the presentation given by Stanton Friedman posed the question. The question in itself is very interesting. It's about Earth being compared to Australia when England was dropping criminals there and letting them become colonists. It boils down to alien beings coming here and depositing their criminals so they can go back home and get on with, well, whatever it is that alien forms get on with. Now, one of the points that Stanton made was that the aliens keep coming back to make sure that the criminals they've transplanted here haven't done anything or developed technology to allow them to escape. And that really kind of falls into the theory that Stanton originally developed, saying that UFOs are just our closest neighbors, and they're keeping an eye on us because they detected when we were capable of splitting the atom and could pose some kind of a threat to them if we were competent enough to get off the planet. Sort of, our idiot neighbors have discovered fire. What can we do to make sure they don't burn down the neighborhood? Well, all in all, that just kind of ties back into why the aliens or ETs are coming here. It's just, again, two more theories that get dumped into the pot and that gets mixed up with the hundreds or thousands of other equally reasonable possibilities. Today, I had another interesting conversation with somebody about UFOs, and we discussed some of the things that he has seen or heard in depth. And he also asked me a bunch of questions about UFOs in general. And the most poignant question was, do you think there's a cover-up going on? I answered, yeah, I do. I believe there's a cover-up going on simply because we have proof that various government and military agencies have lied to us in the past about things involving UFOs. If we combine that with Stanton's theory that aliens are using Earth as a dumping ground for their criminals, it kind of implies that maybe we as a species are kind of cooperating with the aliens. And the powers that be are basically, they're keeping us in the dark because they don't want us to know that, well, we're living on a prison planet. Okay, I had to stop this before this flight of fantasy turns into a new science fiction series or just becomes some B-rated movie. Earth as a penal colony for aliens sounds a little too close to the Men in Black movie for my liking. But I cannot discount the possibility that Stanton could actually be right. Now, I said it a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to repeat it again. Why the aliens or ETs are coming here is not nearly as important as discovering who they are. When we can actually discover what the UFOs are that are flitting around in our skies, and who, if anyone, is piloting them, all the other questions, including why are they coming here, or is Earth just a penal colony for bad aliens, will fall right into place. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange Dave, indeed.
Yeah, they just come here for the ice cream, especially the strawberry ice cream.
Of course they do.
Of course they do. Yeah, it's interesting. I think I've postulated that theory that Stan pitched at Paul Kimball's UFO symposium a couple of weeks ago myself on this program at some point over the last 8 years, probably a couple of times. It's as good a theory, you know. I mean, when you look at the way the Brits handled their criminals, stealing loaves of bread because they were hungry, they had them shipped to Australia.
Yeah. It's just as good a theory as any of the other, like I said, hundreds or thousands of them that are there.
Yeah, but then that makes us the aliens, doesn't it?
Well,
that
some
theory
of us,
is correct, yeah.
Some of us. Not necessarily all of us.
Are we talking us and them now?
Oh, it could be.
Yes. They're waiting for them Martian spaceships to come and pick us up and leave them behind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, the cities of Shan, as somebody once called them. Anything's possible, I guess.
Oh, it is.
And
it
the
is.
Fact that we are here talking about these strange things on a Saturday night, every weekend for 8 years now, you have to think, we haven't run out of things to talk about yet. Nobody's come out and proved us wrong. Mind you, nobody's come out and proved us right either.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's what it all boils down to in the end, is the fact that there are so many things out there that are flitting around and doing strange things, and we cannot answer the question as to what they are.
Or where they're from.
Or where they're from.
Are they from outer space? Are they from inner space? Are they transdimensional?
Yeah. Are they from another time zone? Who knows?
They're from the Pacific time zone.
Yeah, I kind of caught that.
La Land, yes.
Well, it is time to turn the clocks back, all that kind of stuff.
I'm all for a bit of cuckoo, time has come today, Chambers Brothers stuff. Yes. Thank you, Dave, for a lot. We'll talk to you next week.
For sure.
Okay. Good night, Dave.
Good night, Earl.
Good night. Program 416 in the current series, the end of year 8, the start of year 9 tonight. Completely slipped my mind. It's the weekend before Halloween, and that's when we started out 8 years ago.
One of the strangest incidents in the flying saucer story occurred in 1947. When a flying disc was reported to have crashed in New Mexico. The Army dispatched a plane to pick up the remains.
Professionally trained to pick up the remains of the flying disc captured by the United States Army Air Force at Roswell Field, New Mexico. It's odd how they used to speak in those days, isn't it? Wendy Connors joins us. She's the woman who has put together a remarkable series of CDs with MP3 files on them. Faded Discs is the name. She has been collecting audio archives relating to UFOs forever, it seems. At least some of the clips sound as if they come from forever, like that first one. Kind of hard to make out. What was he saying, really, Wendy Connors? Good evening. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Earl, and congratulations on 8 wonderful years. Wow, that's quite an accomplishment.
I think what's more of an accomplishment is forgetting the fact that it was the 8th anniversary.
Yeah, well, we're getting older,
yes,
you know?
Yes, we are.
If we find ourselves standing in the kitchen wondering why we went in there to begin with.
Yeah, not only in the kitchen, but often in the washroom, too. What am I doing here?
What is it with all the ufologists seem to be dropping like flies lately?
I don't know. I think because there's such a wide rift between the senior people, not necessarily in seniority, but in age, and the young Turks that are coming along. And there's not a lot of people in the middle, it seems to me. Consequently, we're sort of climbing into that age group where it's fly dropping time.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But you know, these younger people are doing a really good job.
They are.
Overall. I hope that some of the work that we did over the decades will help them.
It'll count for nothing, Wendy.
You mean I'm not a transhumanist or whatever?
Oh,
whatever the newest buzz thing is?
Oh, transhumanism and what was it? Post-human, post-panspermist and pelicanist.
And now Stan Friedman has aliens, criminals being dumped here?
It's a fairly reasonable theory. It's happened in our history, as we were saying, Dave Ferlot and I earlier, with Brits sending people to the penal colonies in Australia. And hell, there were a lot of them came to Canada, too, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you're the black sheep of the family, and we don't want you around anymore, so off you go to the colonies. Same difference.
You know, I've never run into an alien yet, so that's kind of hard to believe.
Are you sure?
Well, as far as I can be.
Well, did you meet...
I think I would recognize one if I did.
Did you meet David Cherniak?
Oh, yes. Oh, wonderful, wonderful guy.
Oh, slap me around the head with a wet lettuce leaf.
He really can ask the questions, can't he?
Yes, he can.
Very, very insightful man.
Yes.
And I believe that this documentary he's working on will be a really good one.
A 2-hour documentary that he's doing for the History Channel, and he's doing a documentary on Gord Heath at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pity that some of the old-timers didn't want to talk to David Cherniak. A little gun-shy, I think they are, from the way they've been treated over the years by other documentary makers, but really a shame that they didn't climb on board this one.
You should have seen the look on his face when I said, I never promised you an interview. It was classic. You know, I told him, go ahead and get set up.
Oh, I got a woman mean as she can be.
As he pulls into my driveway and takes up the entire driveway with this huge RV.
Well, if you're going to go on the road, you may as well go on the road in style.
That's what I was saying.
Okay, let's talk faded discs. Let's talk UFO audio clips, Wendy Connors.
Okay, well, let me talk about this one that you just listened to.
Yes.
Maybe Julian can play that one more time. It's only 11 seconds.
Do you have it handy, Jules?
One of the strangest incidents in the flying saucer story occurred in 1947, when a flying disc was reported to have crashed in New Mexico. The Army dispatched a plane to pick up the remains.
The Army dispatched a plane to pick up the remains.
Yeah, to go maybe to Fort Worth. But probably if there were aliens picked up, they would have come to Albuquerque at the Lovelace Clinic, because Colonel Lovelace was the only one who could have had a high enough security clearance and medical knowledge to keep things like that under wraps.
Was that audio clip out of Roswell, or was that from a network radio program?
No, actually, John Keel gave us this one. When he was in the military during the Korean War, he was assigned to Germany and the Armed Forces Radio Network. And I think they call it the Armed Forces Radio Services now.
Yeah, AFRTS, I think it is.
Yeah, back then it was AFRN.
AFN, yeah.
He produced a show called Things in the Sky, and this clip is from that in 1952. And this is the earliest mention of Roswell, other than the two news items that came out for the crash in Roswell. This is one of the earliest. This is from 1952. And what's so interesting about it is John found an acetate disc of this show that he produced back in 1952. And, of course, as you know, you've been in radio for so long that acetate discs deteriorate really quickly.
Yes, they do.
And then on top of it, to save it, he taped it onto a reel-to-reel tape at 1 7/8 inches per second.
Oh, my.
And that, plus putting the microphone up next to
the speaker.
Phonograph.
Yeah.
Now, it has taken me 4 years just get it so that you can listen to it. It was that bad. All the listeners out there, if there's somebody that you want to hear or an incident or a case or something, just email me, and I'll try to bring it up when I'm on next. But I do get a lot of emails, and this one says, Wendy, besides Long John Nebel and Frank Edwards, were there any other popular radio pundits in the 1950s that discussed UFOs? Now, I know you played clips from Long John Nebel and Frank Edwards. Yes, there was, and his name was Norbert Garrity. He's a very rabid anti-communist, and a person whose intelligence level rose to his knees.
But, and we're going to play his clip tonight.
Oh, yeah, and his show was out of Miami, Florida from the mid-1950s until the early 1960s.
Huh?
And he gave his listening audience the really good, the bad, and the ugly, but he often got things wrong. This clip will give you an idea of what I mean.
Well, we have some strange things going on in our own missile program. And this bit of information comes to me from Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. It happened some time ago, but it's just now getting into public notice. The incident took place on April the 3rd of this year, 2 months ago. At X plus 3, during a routine MACE fire, the missile suddenly went out of control. Simultaneously, the boys at Tula Peak were astounded to hear the telemetry band being jammed by a strange voice. This is one of the tracking stations. This strange phenomenon persisted for the remainder of the mission, a period of approximately 15 minutes duration. Skip effects of ionosphere reflections are not uncommon in the VHF band and lower, but both frequencies concerned here are in excess of 200 megacycles and are chosen because of their immunity to skip effects. The question is, what transmitting source within line-of-sight range interfered with the MACE mission? Was a spare transmitter on the ground flipped on by accident? No. Telemetry transmitters are not equipped to handle voice modulation. Deliberate sabotage? Not likely. Why would a saboteur waste his energy talking? And where did he get the strange language? The combined linguistic background of the listeners was able to eliminate all European languages as well as Russian and Japanese. On Monday, April 6, two Air Force officers arrived at Holloman Air Force Base from Wright-Patterson Field. They called a conference of military personnel concerned with this incident. Stamped the telemetry tapes top secret. They had previously been unclassified. And they tucked the tapes under their arms and went home to Wright Field. And I imagine that's the last we're going to hear about that. But it happened in one of our missile firings at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico.
Norbert Garrity, huh?
Norbert Garrity and his telemetry.
Telemetry, yeah.
Telemetry. He's talking about telemetry tapes having voice contacts on them.
Well, how does that
happen?
It doesn't. But I mean, had it actually happened that he happened to be talking about it?
No, actually, he's got his dates and he's confusing two different incidents at Holloman. He did his best, I guess.
Oh, Lordy. Wendy Connors down there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, she puts together faded discs. They're actually not faded at all, but MP3 CDs with dozens and dozens and dozens of audio clips on them. UFO history in audio. And we are playing some clips, some listener requests.
This one says, Wendy, I am new to ufology and would like to hear Major Donald E. Kehoe's position on UFOs. Would you play something on Strange Days Indeed? Here's Major Donald E. Kehoe, who was the director of the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, explaining point blank what he believed regarding UFOs.
I believe in flying saucers because there is massive documented evidence by pilots, missile trackers, radar men, and other highly trained observers that strange objects superior to anything we now have are operating in our skies. They have been seen, photographed, tracked by radar, and the secret conclusions of the United States Air Force are exactly the same as my own conclusions and those of our committee. That these objects, the flying saucers, or unidentified flying objects, are real. They are machines under intelligent control from an unknown source. The United States Air Force went one step further and said that these are interplanetary spaceships, with which I personally agree. The United States Air Force has adopted a policy of officially debunking and explaining away these reports, even to the point of ridiculing their own veteran pilots. We have cases we can prove that with, documented cases. Because when they started out, they were puzzled and a little disturbed by these sighting reports, and they decided the best thing was to go under wraps with this subject until they had the answers. And that was in effect for about 2 years. At that time, they were about to come out in the open and say that there was evidence that these things were interplanetary, and General Hoyt Vandenberg, the chief of staff, vetoed it, changed the policy to one of debunking them while behind the scenes they were actually investigating these things. And this has been the policy ever since, with a few variations. Occasionally, a group in the Air Force has tried to get it out in the open, and there have been reports that have been leaked or even officially released for that purpose. But right now, the Air Force stand is openly, they don't exist. Behind the scenes, they're real, and we have to find out what they're here for.
Major Donald Kehoe, the NICAP founder, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. Wendy Connors is with us from down there in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Faded Discs, an audio archive of UFO history, is her website. It's at fadeddiscs.com. And if you go there, you can pick yourself up a Clipcast, free MP3 download, Dawn of the Flying Discs, 1942 to 1949. Runs for 31 minutes. It's an MP3 file. Will give you a little taste of some of the CDs that you can buy as Christmas gifts for this coming season. Make wonderful gifts, too. A lot of those CDs have over 30 hours of audio on them. MP3 magic is what it is.
As a matter of fact, I've just today just completed the next compilation, and we'll talk about that when I come on next time.
Oh, cool. Okay,
yeah,
good.
This is a biggie.
They're all biggies. That's the amazing thing. They're major gems there, and stuff that nobody's ever heard anywhere. And how you get a hold of them, sometimes it just boggles my brain.
it's a never-ending effort. I was going to ask you, have you ever heard of SETI?
The Silly Inquiry into Terrestrial Intelligence?
Well, yeah, I guess that's one way of saying it. The Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence?
Yes. Yeah, have heard of SETI.
How about this one? Wendy, I am trying to find anything you have about radio signals from outer space. I'm a real SETI fan. Could you play something? Oh, you bet. How about going back to November 11th, 1965, and a report out of Bedford, Massachusetts regarding a strange signal? This is Haywood Vincent giving the details.
Scientists at Bedford say they cannot explain the behavior of radio noises coming from a spot in space labeled W3. This noise itself has been identified, but the way it acts is unknown. A team from MIT's Lincoln Lab says that the situation is surprising and extremely difficult to explain. Using the Air Force's 120 dish atop Haystack Hill, Lincoln Lab's team started studying W-3 because a group of scientists in far-off California had reported radio sounds that might be produced from an unknown source. These studies show that unlike other known space radio emissions, these W-3 noises have a sort of order to them. They are polarized, and there is no way to explain how they got that way at this time, whether this ties in with last Tuesday evening, as some think it might. We don't know. We'll try to find out more as this evening goes on.
Right.
Yeah.
Long before SETI and Jill Tarter.
And the WOW signal.
And the WOW signal and the real political thing that SETI has become.
I want to go back just for a moment,
sure,
Wendy, to the Donald Kehoe clip that we played before.
Sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard him say that the Air Force said that they were extraterrestrial spaceships. Did I hear right?
You did.
And the Air Force actually came out and said that and then changed their minds?
I think what Major Kehoe was alluding to was that in his contacts in the Air Force, and that he had been told that, not officially, but you knew an awful lot of people in the
Air
Forces.
Yes, yes.
And that, I mean, he flew with Lindbergh, so I guess he knew what he was talking about. But I think that he was alluding that this was basically what the majority of people in the Air Force thought,
and
who had studied it, yeah.
And to come back to the clip we just played, there was an anomalous signal there. Do you know if there was ever any follow-up to that? Were there any subsequent reports? Had anybody analyzed what was heard?
None that I can find. The only thing that I can tell you is that this happened either the day before the great blackout in 65 or the day after.
I hear now that they're blaming that blackout on sunspots. I watched a documentary. I forget whether it was Discovery or PBS.
Well, they're not going to say aliens. Come on.
Although there were a lot of UFOs seen over power lines and power stations that day.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And photographed over New York, too.
Yes.
Next clip, because we're rapidly running out of time here.
Well, we can let this be the last one, I think. This one is from a reader of UFO Updates. He's asking about Frank Edwards. He said, did Frank Edwards ever see a flying saucer himself? Now, Frank Edwards was a radio personality who first brought the news of UFOs in the news to the public. And yes, he did see a UFO along with a couple of thousand other witnesses. He describes it this way.
And it was on Columbus Day in 1961. We'd just taped a show that I did. I started toward the parking lot, which meant that I was walking toward the city. And I happened to glance up, and there was this great silvery ball just hanging up there in the air. It was up over a big expressway. It was brightly lighted on the underside. And I could see the rim turning slowly around the equator of this ball. For years, I had told people what to do when they saw one of these things. The Air Force recommends this, too. Get out a coin, hold it up between yourself and the object to give an approximate idea of size. Get the names of all witnesses. Notice which way the wind is blowing, which way the sun or moon is shining at the time, if either of them are present. And notice how fast the thing is going and which way it goes when it leaves. And be sure to look at your watch and know how long it's in sight. I've told people this for years. And when I saw this thing, I stood there with my mouth open. I air-conditioned my adenoids for a couple of minutes. I forgot all about all this business, and I just stood and watched the thing. But about 2,000 people saw it.
Air-conditioned his adenoids. It's hard to imagine Frank Edwards' mouth agape, huh?
That's true. Little Mouth told me that Jerry Cohen's going to be on tonight.
Actually, Jerry Cohen has been sitting listening. Jerry Cohen,
I'm
say
just
hi
sitting
to
sitting here enjoying hearing Wendy's voice.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Wendy. How you doing there?
Oh, I'm doing fine, kiddo. And yourself?
Oh, just great.
You folks haven't shared the same space together, have you?
No, we haven't.
That's right, and it's very interesting just hearing her voice. It's great.
Thank you.
Because we have exchanged a lot of communication. I mean,
yes, we
wrote back and forth a lot.
So there, Jerry Cohen and Wendy Connors, Wendy Connors and Jerry Cohen meet on Strange Days Indeed. Wendy, thank you for spending the time with us. And again, as always, thank you for the work.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. It's always a pleasure.
And I want the listeners to remember to go to fadeddiscs.com and look around there. Look at some of the discs that are being offered there for a reasonable donation of $20. There's some amazing stuff there. Hours and hours and hours and hours of fascinating UFO history. Buy some for yourself for Christmas. Buy some for your friends for Christmas. They'll love them and thank you for it. And download a free clip task while you're there. Good night, Wendy Connors.
Good night. Thank you.
A lot of people seem to think that most UFO researchers are involved with various organizations like the Mutual UFO Network or Skywatch or various state organizations, local organizations. Not all UFO researchers are so affiliated. For instance, Jerry Cohen has been an independent researcher for, these many, many years, and goes about his work very quietly and tirelessly behind the scenes, and has a website which is an astounding gold mine, a platinum mine of real X-File info, a must-visit online UFO history book and debunking site. I guess that's the way to put it.
Errol, it's great to talk to you again.
It's good to know that you're out there and not tromboning this Saturday night.
And I turned down a job, too.
You did?
I really did.
Oh.
But I wanted to talk. I wanted to be here with you. You had asked me about it, and I wanted to be on with you.
Oh, that's very sweet of you. Thank you. And I'm sorry that this program has cost you money, and we could recompense you.
It's the money. It doesn't. Not that it doesn't matter, but this is my interest. I mean, I'm retired at this point, and it's interesting. I'm doing something that really interests me and that my interest has been in for many years. This was worth staying home and talking about.
Oh, good. I hope finally getting to say hi to Wendy Connors in person somewhat. It was worth the wait.
It absolutely was. We exchanged a lot of letters back and forth. One of the first things was about the Hickson and Parker case. She had come on and written something online on UFO updates and had mentioned that she had a tape of the original police recording.
In fact, we played that on this program a couple of years back.
I asked her if she'd send me one. She did. And I started listening to it, and that was when she first had it, right in the beginning, before she really did all the work of bringing all the quality of it out and getting rid of all the fuzz in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the first recording, you could barely hear, into it. You really had to listen. And at that particular point, I sat down with one of the articles that was written in the papers concerning it, and I sort of sat there with the paper in front of me, and I sort of listened to what was being said on the recording. And the little bits that I got, it was, close to the article, but there were a lot of things you could not hear. So I just sort of really spent about a week on it, and then sent what I had, what I could take off of it, because I'm a musician. I thought maybe my ears might help a little bit, and sent it to her. And then I wasn't really part of their team, but she worked on it, and later on she sent me a copy that was so clear that you could really hear everything. And then I took a look at the article, and I realized that the thing was verbatim, exactly what people had written about the case. I mean, it was exactly right in the papers, and I think it was in the Inquirer was one of the places that it was.
That's a surprise.
But Bob Pratt, I think, was one of the writers there.
Right.
Bob Pratt did an awful lot of very credible investigations in his lifetime.
I have to say that before I got involved in the field, I guess about 14, 15 years ago now, I used to mock, in fact, still do, the Inquirer stuff.
As most people would do.
As any
logical person would do, because most of the stuff that you read there is so silly,
Yes.
When you look at it, you say, well, this has got to be silly, too.
And in fact, it turned out not to be silly because of Bob Pratt, who passed away last year.
That's right, recently.
I was sitting puzzled a couple of weeks ago when suddenly the Belgian UFO case loomed again. And it was because you had critiqued the critique of the case. And
Mark Hallett's article. It was a very interesting article because I read it and I thought that just possibly maybe I was wrong in some of the things that I put up on my website. It really made me question the things that I had up there. He really was saying a lot of negatives about the Belgian UFO group, SOBEPS, And also the Professor August Meissen, scientist who was working with Sobeb's studying the case. And after I read Mark Hallett's article, I started thinking and thinking. I went over it again, and I started taking parts of it out, the parts where he was putting down Sobeb's and the part where he was putting down August Meissen. When I really looked deeply into it, I saw that I thought I saw a mistake that he had made about a particular thing that he said, and I went further with that, and the further I went with it, I realized that other things were wrong with his article as well. And again, it doesn't mean that I am 1,000% correct about the Belgian case, but I was trying to unravel at least my original thoughts. I thought were pretty much in line. The things I had written on the website were fairly much correct. Right now on your mail list, we're having conversations, and I think we're going to start unwinding some of that stuff.
For the sake of our listeners who aren't familiar with the Belgian UFO case, and we've talked about this several times over the years on this program, this was a large flying triangle that was chased by the Belgian Air Force.
That's correct.
And they had radar lock on it. In actual fact, if they'd so chosen, could have fired on this flying triangle.
Well, what was interesting about it, first of all, was that what you're talking about is only one case out of approximately 632 that I'm aware of, and I think there were even more because Sobeb's came out and said there were many, many more cases than they originally published in their first book, because they did publish a book on this. I think the original report came from National Policemen. That's how they got their attention on it. Then after checking the radars for about 55 minutes, they found they were in correct working order, and they trying to contact this thing, and there was no transponder signal coming from what they were recording on the radar. So at that point, they felt that there was some kind of threat, and they decided to send up the F-16s. I mean, they just wanted to investigate what was up there and what was going on. They were flying around and chasing this thing for approximately an hour and 10 minutes and unable to catch it. And it was doing things that were so out of norm that kind of blew their minds. They just chased it around the sky, and they just collected information on it. They got some radar locks on two planes that they sent up. And I think at one point they even got a correlation between the radars that were down on the ground and one of the planes, that there was a definite correlation that they were seeing something, hard returns on the radars, not just like temperature inversions. That, at least that's what the final Belgian Air Force report said.
The Belgians, like the French and the Brits and the Germans, they're all part of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. They're all experienced air forces. They work very closely together, particularly back in those days, because there were still problems with the Russians. They would obviously know if what they were chasing, what they were seeing, what they were logging, what they were tracking was Russian. So what they had was an absolute anomaly. There was no way of explaining it from a military or aviation point of view.
That's correct. As soon as the F-16s would get a radar lock on the target, whatever they were chasing would break, and it appeared to take evasive action. It would dive below radar detection. And they even said that one break was achieved by some kind of jamming signal that came back on the screen. Again, the further I'm reading into this thing and the more I'm examining it, the more amazing it is. So they had this thing kind of locked down. I mean, after it was all over and they did an analysis on the whole thing, the Belgian Air Force came out. They said it's not weak temperature inversion signals. It is very strong signals. It was evasive action. They tried to eliminate everything they possibly could eliminate. They believed that it was not electronic malfunction because everything was in perfect working order. The radars were working perfectly, otherwise they wouldn't have sent the planes up. Plane radars recorded things, but they could not catch these things, and some of the moves were so dramatic that pilot would have been totally crushed by the G-forces that these things exhibited when they were flying around.
These aren't the first instances of this sort of situation. These situations have been repeated over and over and over again in the last 50, 60 years.
That's exactly right. What happened there, too, was in looking at what Mark Hallett had to say about it, one of the things he said was that none of this was really true, and after reading what Sobeb's had to say about it, the only point of convergence in the sightings is the word triangle. And not all the sightings were triangular, therefore, he says, there was no coherence and nothing really happened. But my comment was that I think that he took the wrong point of convergence. What he should have chosen was devices which are capable of floating large masses in the air and maneuvering them freely through Belgian airspace. And then coherence would become apparent to all. Because he said that not all the sightings were triangular. Well, I don't think that the triangle thing was the whole thing. It was just the thing that these things that have been seen in Belgium, in many of the cases, were giant platforms like floating in the air. And reported by the national police, one of the cases that happened 4 months prior to that happened in Eupen, Belgium. The Belgian Air Force was aware of that case, and I believe that they were, like, looking at it, and they were totally mystified by it. Two policemen that were out in a field saw this giant triangular thing with lights on three corners hovering over the field with the light shining down on the field. They could not hear any sound coming off it. They followed it. It wasn't moving very fast at that particular time. They're in, like, a foresty kind of area, and there was a second one of these platforms that comes up from out of the forest and somehow does something with the first one, and they're looking at this thing for like something like a half hour of this thing sending out laser beams that weren't real laser beams. Like a laser beam would normally go straight out in a straight line, and you wouldn't see where the beam ended unless you hit something, and then the beam would shine on an object. But these things, sort of the beam kind of went straight out like that, but then was able to be retracted in slowly.
Was there any sort of measurement or a guesstimate of the size of these things?
People were saying some of the ones that they were seeing were as big as a football field. And, I mean, as crazy as that sounds, there was a case in Illinois in the United States. I believe it was the year 2000, and Daryl Barker, who also has a website, has done intensive coverage of that particular sighting, and it's very, very similar to what was seen in Belgium, that particular thing.
There was also one over Montreal, a few years back, over a big hotel there.
Right.
Same thing, size of a football field.
In this particular case, the reason I'm just even mentioning this was, like, when they did the study on this thing, there's a group called NIDS, composed of a bunch of PhDs who got together and started studying some of these various cases, and they got to study that particular Illinois case. And they mentioned that the thing was something like three stories off the ground, or three stories high is what they said. So I wrote a person from NIDS, and I said, did you mean it was three stories off the ground, or did you mean it was three stories thick? And Keller wrote me back and said, I meant the latter. It was three stories thick. That's what people reported. These were policemen and other people that saw it. Some of these things that have been seen are totally huge. Matter of fact, I apologize for going on and on about that last case.
No, it's okay.
The point I didn't get to in that last thing was the fact that just when those policemen saw that stuff going on with the two craft, sort of like sending these beams out, they called it into the main police station where they were dispatched from. The dispatcher laughed at them where they were saying this stuff, and then he looked out the window and actually saw one of these things go by his window. This was on an Unsolved Mystery with Robert Stack, and they had the testimony from Colonel Wilfred de Brouwer, Chief of Operations of the Belgian Air Force, who showed the gun camera films on that particular thing, and they had recreations by each of the officers that was involved in the case. I don't know whether they were the real people or just recreated, but they said this is exactly what happened, and I mean, that's how they portrayed the case. And they were saying, yes, this is an unsolved mystery.
Then you've got the Argentine Air Force and the Argentine military down there owning up to having investigated a series of cases happening down there, watching beams come out of the objects,
right,
people being injured by the beams, people being sucked up into these craft, and the military personnel just being scared witless by what they were seeing.
I never put any of that stuff on my website. I mean, I really tried to be so careful not to get into any kind of abduction thing in all the time that I've been doing my case. But looking at the cases that they just released now, I was aware of that. Bob Pratt had done studies on it. He went down there. He spent his entire life, after the stuff that he wrote for the National Enquirer, he spent his own money traveling around getting details on various cases, and that's one of the main places he visited. He went down there and was, like, totally incredulous at these things that he saw, but he talked to the people directly to the people involved. So we had some of this information before the Brazilian military actually just let it out.
But they've
let it out.
Yep.
And I'm amazed.
Yeah, as are A.J. Gavert and a lot of the people down there. Jerry Cohen, we're out of time.
Okay. I just have to say, Errol, that it was a pleasure. I'm really glad that I stayed home and got a chance to talk
and
to
you
live. It's been a while since we've talked together.
We've got to do it again sometime, and on a night where you're not turning down gigs. Jerry Cohen, thank you, sir.
It was a pleasure.
Good night, Jerry. Yes, Cohen UFO, CohenUFO.org. Go read. There is wonderful stuff there. We will be back next Saturday night. John Velez, Alfred Lemberg, and Don Ledger will join us. Thank you, Julian McNabb, Jim Pacheco. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any questions or comments to sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Strange Days Indeed is the copyright of Random Fit Productions. Join us again next Saturday for more Strange Days Indeed from the Virtually Strange Network. Good night.